So the book is Nimitz at War, Command Leadership from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay by Professor Craig Simons, U.S. Naval Academy Emeritus. We're concentrating on the relationships of the commanders, the flag officers, the generals of the Marine Corps, the generals of the Army. We now come to Spruance commanding the fleet during the landings on the Marianas. And there is an opportunity to take on the Japanese fleet and to go up against what looks at this point a Japanese attempt to launch all of its aircraft and sink American carriers. There were a great number of carriers. They're coming on all the time now. The arsenal of democracy is delivering big carriers after big carriers. And Task Force 58 then takes on the Japanese attack in what is known as the Battle of the Philippine Sea, but is otherwise known as the Turkey Shoot. What do we learn about this moment and Spruance's decision-making, Professor?
Well, keep in mind that the United States Navy, in peacetime, always plans for contingencies. What might happen? How can we prepare for that? It's happening today as we speak. And it certainly happened throughout the 1930s. And the planning that most Navy officers assumed would come forth is that at some point in a possible future war with Japan, there would be a major naval battle somewhere in the Western Pacific, and that naval battle would decide the outcome of the war. So American naval officers and Japanese naval officers, too, have been looking forward to this big confrontation. But Spruance is assigned the job of capturing the island of Saipan. And he, who is in overall command of all the American forces, says that's job one, protecting that beachhead. So when the Japanese fleet threatens the American invasion, Mark Mitcher, who commands the American carrier force, which, as you mentioned, is now greatly expanded, 15 aircraft carriers, he wants to go out and get them. And Spruance says, no, our job is to cover the beachhead, to make sure the Marines on shore have adequate air cover. You stay here, close enough to cover the beach, and defend yourself from this Japanese attack. Well, the result is an air battle. The Japanese send airplanes to attack. The Americans throw up hundreds of airplanes to defend. The American planes are newer, faster, better. Their pilots are better trained, and we have twice as many of them as the Japanese. So the outcome is, as you suggested, a kind of turkey shoot in which the faster, newer American planes shoot down 400 of the Japanese airplanes, essentially breaking Japanese naval air power in the Pacific. But Mitcher decides he has been denied the opportunity to go out and sink the carriers themselves. He does launch a very late attack the next day, but it's not enough. And so there's resentment among the aviator community that this black shoe, Raymond Spruance, did not let them go do what they wanted to do, which was go after the Japanese. And that controversy simmered for weeks afterward.
Yes, and now we come to one of the decisions that is going to make Nimitz's job with Halsey difficult. After that turkey shoot in January, we have the battle of Leyte, the storming ashore on Leyte by MacArthur's forces, the Army. And guarding that invasion fleet are the 7th Fleet, which is commanded by a man named Kincaid, answering to MacArthur, and the 3rd Fleet, commanded by Halsey, answering to Nimitz. And the Japanese send out a tri-corner attack by 3 different admirals. 2 of them have big battleships coming from the Sea of Japan, through the Philippines, through the Philippine archipelago. Another one, the carriers are coming from the north. The carriers are empty, but Nimitz and Halsey don't know that. Halsey takes the bait and goes after the carriers. And now we have the Battle of Leyte Gulf that is again and again, and I learn, a debate at the U.S. Naval Academy. And I'm sure the professor has led many of these debates.
Indeed, I have. That's absolutely true. And I think it's a great teaching point because it shows the difference between a tactical and operational confrontation and clear strategic thinking. The Japanese in the Battle of the Philippine Sea had lost most of their trained carrier pilots. So they have carriers, but they're toothless. They have maybe 100 airplanes total. But they send them out anyway, not to fight. They send them out as bait. Their job is to draw Halsey's huge force, the Third Fleet, away from the Philippines so that the Japanese battleships and cruisers can sneak in among the American landing craft and destroy the invasion force. That's the plan. It's a desperate plan, but it almost works because Halsey takes the bait. He heads north after those empty carriers, sinks a couple of them, but the result is that the Japanese battleships and cruisers get through this narrow passage of the San Bernardino Strait and get right on the cusp of entering the Leyte Gulf and attacking the American invasion force. Now, astonishingly, the Japanese lose their nerve and turn around and don't get that done, but it was such a near-run thing as to be almost seem fictional.
Yes, it still does. We go over and over, and there's some, we're going to get tactical here. There's a moment Nimitz is watching this, but Halsey maintains silence. He doesn't get any word. He sends words to Halsey, but Halsey doesn't reply. At one point, Halsey has indicated he's designated his fast battleships. These are new built, magnificent machines, Task Force 34, to guard the invasion fleet. But he takes it with him north, chasing the Japanese carriers. Nimitz, Chester Nimitz, sends out a message saying, where's Task Force 34? Because he's getting emergency alerts from the American jeep carriers who have been guarding the landing fleet that are defenseless against Japanese warships coming out, cruisers and battleships. And yeah, Halsey gets offended, and Halsey spends an hour in a tantrum. That's a mysterious hour, Professor.
It is a mysterious hour, unless you understand the psyche of Bull Halsey, and then it begins to make some sense. Keep in mind that one of Nimitz's leadership characteristics is that he perceived his job as the strategic theater commander. Identify the objective. Make sure your subordinate commander knows what it is, what your expectations are. Supply him with everything he needs to be successful. Give him all the information you can, and then let him run the battle. So Nimitz did not like to interfere with a subordinate commander who is engaged with the enemy 8,000 miles away. So he's really does not want to send Halsey any orders. And yet, Nimitz is receiving these panicky, sent in the clear radio messages, Japanese battleships about to enter Leyte Gulf, help, help, help. And he doesn't want to interfere, but finally he decides, well, I can at least ask Halsey a question. I'll ask him, where is Task Force 34? Well, I don't know how much of this you want to go into. It gets a bit complicated in terms of the padding. But there's misunderstanding at the end, because part of the padding in the message is the whole world wonders.
Yes.
And that is sent to Halsey on the bridge, and he reads, where is Task Force 34? The whole world wonders. He throws it on the ground, stomps on it with his foot. What right has Chester to send me a goddamn message like that? And this is when he and his chief of staff, Mick Kearney, go down into Halsey's flag cabin and sulk for an hour before he makes a decision.
And this becomes the moment that Chester Nimitz is going to have to review again and again, because when we come back, next up, Halsey in a Typhoon. The book is Nimitz at War. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.